and welcome to Lenny's Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 61. Nothing fancy in this podcast, just an update about what has been going on in my Linux adventures. I am now a member of the Gentoo Public Relations Project as a staff member. What that means is that I'm not a full-fledged developer for Gentoo, just a staff member to help out with the PR project, and I've also been doing a few other things. The first thing that I did was I put together a page for the Gentoo 10-year anniversary. Yes, Gentoo is celebrating a birthday. I am going to be talking about a lot of different links, so instead of saying all of them during this podcast, if there are any topics that you would like more information on or a clearer explanation, please visit LennyCrazy.com for all the links. As part of the Gentoo celebration for the 10-year anniversary, I put together a screenshot contest, and the screenshot contest is going along very nicely. So far, we have about 40 entrants and a lot of different screenshots. So, like I said, go ahead and visit LennyCrazy.com, and there will be a link, and you can go ahead and view all of the different screenshots. I also did a very interesting interview with Robin H. Johnson. He's a Gentoo developer, and he's also a trustee board member. He's the infrastructure team lead, and what that means is that he is the main guy that takes care of all the Gentoo servers, and that is very important within Gentoo. Gentoo is a source-based distribution, and one of the package managers, and the one that I use, is called Portage. And when you do an emerge sync, and what that does is it rsyncs your list of all of the available packages. And when you go to install a package, you do emerge the package name. And what that does is it goes ahead and installs that package. During this time, it is constantly communicating with the server and downloading files, patches, and stuff like that. So within Gentoo, the infrastructure is very important. And Robin has, like I said, Robin is the lead of the infrastructure team lead. And his nickname is R-O-B-B-A-T-2. Robert 2 is his nickname. He has some other people that help him, naturally, with the infrastructure. But I kind of say Robin is the lead guy because he's the one that I kind of see around all the time. I'm pretty sure there's some other fellows that are maybe women, too. There's some other people, let's say, that are also on the infrastructure team that do a very good job, but they're more behind the scenes, I guess you could say. Now, like I said, Robin is the backbone of the Gentoo infrastructure, which includes the Gentoo forums, which is very important. It's a very good forum. If you've ever been there, you know people depend on the forums. Bugzilla. Gentoo has a very active Bugzilla. And most important, like I said, the Gentoo Portage tree. In this little interview I do with Robin, he describes his first open source project. He started out with PHP MyAdmin, and how he became a Gentoo developer, and the layout of the infrastructure. So if you get a chance, go ahead and visit LennyCrazy.com again and to get that link. Yeah, I just didn't want to have to say, well, I got a ton of links I'm going to be going through, and I didn't want to say http://www for all of these, because you're not going to be able to hear them anyhow correctly. And if you just visit LennyCrazy.com, all the links will be there. You just go there and you just click on whatever link that you're interested in. Let's see, we've talked about the screenshot contest. We've talked about, as part of this, becoming part of the PR team, I've been learning Guide XML, which is Gentoo's way of doing documentation and way of, the website is just laid out with this. It's a certain type of coding that you do for Gentoo's website. It's in XML format, and it's called Guide XML, and there's a certain way that they want it done. It's real, they're real picky about it. There's a certain way it only can be two tab spaces, and the blocks have to be laid out in a certain way. And so I've been learning that, been getting better at it, and I've posted about 5 or 6 already different news items, and I've been also helping out on the Perl team. I don't do Perl. I mainly do Python, but I've been helping out the Perl team because Gentoo lost their main Perl developer, I guess it was around 6 months ago, and there's only one guy that's trying to do Perl, and he's falling behind, naturally. He's busy, too, with school. So, anyhow, Perl has fallen behind, and they're at 5.8.8. So, there's been a big request to go ahead and get Perl updated to 5.10. So, what I did was I went ahead and set up the overlay for Perl 5.10, and in Gentoo, you have the main portage tree, and then you can set up as many overlays as you want. You can have your own personal overlay, or you can use these different overlays. Now, there's a whole bunch of different overlays. There's Layman, which includes a bunch of different overlays, and Sunrise is another overlay that has programs that our users are putting together, and all these programs, basically what they are in the overlays is the e-builds. E-builds are in Gentoo. They're like little bash scripts that go ahead and resolve all the using portage, it resolves the dependencies and installs the program with a bunch of little portage helper scripts, you could say. So I've been helping out with the Perl, and I've been filing some bugs and trying to help out so that they can get move Perl from 5.8.8 to 5.10. And also, I have been learning some Bash. As you know, if you've listened to the podcast before, you'll know that I've been investing a lot of my time in learning Python. I had never done any programming before, and people said that it would be good to learn Python. Would be a good programming language to start out with to get the basics in programming. So that's what I've been doing. I've been doing it almost a year now, and I'm starting to catch on. I'm to the point now that if somebody said I would want a program to do this, I can pretty much put it together or find out how to put it together. It might not be perfect, or it might not be exactly the best way to do it, but I can usually get something to work. What I usually do is I'll run across something that I'm doing over and over and over again. And so what I'll do is I'll go ahead and create a little Python program to automate the tasks. And that's the whole idea of what programming is for, is to automate these tasks that we do over and over again. So back to the Bash. My Bash experience was not in really programming. I know Bash somewhat as far as just by using it on the command line. So Gentoo uses these e-builds, which are basically Bash scripts. So what I've been doing is I've been learning Bash to be able to create these e-builds. Eventually down the line, I might consider becoming a full-fledged developer. But I'm not sure, I'm not really ready right yet. It's a lot of responsibility as far as just taking care of certain programs. When you become a full-fledged developer, basically what you want to do is you want to maintain some programs. So maintain some programs that you're interested in. And right now I don't feel confident enough to be really dependent on to maintain any programs right at this point. Now down the line, maybe once I get more comfortable, it could be. But plus, just to have the time, you know, with working full time, and really this being a staff member is taking up some time. To continue learning Python, that's taking up some time. And doing these podcasts, that takes up some time. So really, I don't have a whole lot of extra time to be doing much of anything, really, to be honest with you. This I took on that screenshot contest. You'd be surprised with the entrances and everything that I've been pretty busy doing that. Plus also asking questions on IRC and just being available for different stuff. I've put together some news items for different people as part of the being in the PR, a staff member. So back to those links again that I was talking about before. Here we come with some more links. I got the links that I'm using to learn Bash with. The Advanced Bash Scripting Guide, the Gentoo Development Guide, the Linux Command Line and Shell Scripting Bible. I got that book. It's a real good book. So if anybody's looking for a really good command line book, it's good. Linux Command Line and Shell Scripting Bible. So like I said, I'll put those links up there. Also, with doing more programming with Python and everything, my typing skills are lacking. When I was younger, I used to touch type, and then during the years of not really doing a whole lot of real typing, I just kind of got lazy and started just kind of doing looking and pecking. Typing. So I've gone back to becoming more a proficient typer, to whereas I don't have to look at the keyboard doing touch typing. So I've used GNU Typist, which is a command line program, which is very, very good. Also, I enjoy using Klavaro, Klavaro. There's another link that I'm going to put there. There's 3 typing tutors and a boy. That's moving along slowly. It's another thing that you just have to spend time on and just practice. And next on my list of things that I did was I got Pulse Audio working. The reason I went ahead and did the deal was I kept having problems with sound and doing these podcasts and just liking to listen to music. Sound is important. So I was having a lot of trouble. What would happen is once I went ahead and updated, for some reason sound would stop working. So what it is that Pulse Audio is being basically shoved down our necks. It's coming in from upstream, and a lot of programs are including Pulse Audio support. I never used to have any trouble with sound with ALSA. I couldn't play more than one device, but I didn't seem to have any trouble, because if I was listening to music and I went ahead and went to a website that was like a YouTube or something like that playing Flash, it seemed like I always had sound. So I was getting sound out of two. It seemed to be working fine by me 6 months ago, 8 months ago. But now all of a sudden, for some reason, this Pulse Audio has come into being. And I guess it's for being able to play multiple streams of music at the same time. What I found out was when I would do an update is all of a sudden sound would stop working. Usually it would stop working with Flash first. And then sometimes the sound would be really choppy just playing regular music any kind of music player. So I started investigating to see what was going on, and it all boiled down to basically Pulse Audio. Being Pulse Audio was getting pulled in by these other programs, and these other programs were attempting to use Pulse Audio, something happened to my sound. So I went ahead and configured Pulse Audio the correct way so that it would work. I was trying to compile everything without Pulse Audio support. And that started running into problems too, because some programs depend on Pulse Audio now. Like I said, it's coming from upstream. So now for using GNOME, here's basically what I did. I went ahead and added support for Pulse Audio, ALSA, and OSS. And then I emerged a bunch of different programs. Pulse Audio comes with a bunch of different helper programs. Then you had to set up my home AS soundrc, .assoundrc for Pulse. Then I had to add myself to the group Pulse. Then I had to go ahead and configure GNOME for Pulse support. And then I had to configure GS Streamer for Pulse support. And then I went ahead and restarted all the Hall Daemon and my Alsa Daemons and everything. And I went ahead and logged out and restarted X. And I got it all working. So it's working just fine. There's no popping sounds. There's no crackling noises. It works with Flash. It's working with Audacity. It works with all of my music players. It's working with everything. So I put a little guide that I did on my webpage. I got another website. I got linuxcrazy.com. Well, in fact, I got a bunch of sites. But anyhow, I got linuxcrazy.com that where I put the podcast. And I don't add anything else to it. I just leave that basically as the podcast. Then while I'm doing this PR thing with Gen 2, I needed a place I'll just put Gen 2 specific stuff. So for that, I created a website. It's called gen2-pr.org. So if you go there, you'll see a few of my little tips that as I come across stuff that I find in Gen 2. Also, that's where I'm storing all of the screenshots and all of the specs for the screenshot contest. It's just a temporary place I'm holding everything. Plus, so there is a place for people to view the screenshots and see the information that goes along with the screenshots. The reason that we didn't host all of the screenshots and the information, everything on the Gen 2 website is the reason. Number one, I didn't want to put all of these screenshots on my web space at gen2.org. I have a web space at gen2.org, but I didn't want to stick all of these screenshots. You know, they're not small. So I didn't want to stick all of those shots there. And they haven't come up with the infrastructure. It's supposed to come up with a special server just for media, which the media could be any podcast by Gen 2 developers. The media could be like these screenshots, anything like media involved, and have a server just for that. But that hasn't come about yet. And I didn't want to put all of this stuff on the main Gen 2 website. I couldn't, even if I wanted to. I only have, as part of the staff member of Gen 2, I basically only have access to one part of the Gen 2 website. Like, I can't go to the front page and change anything on the front page. I just don't have access to it. I have access to the PR project page, but that's basically it. So I couldn't change anything anyhow. So this way, I can put the screenshots, the information on the screenshots, and I can do it pretty fast so that users and people that are entered into the contest, or people just like you that want to just see it, have a place to go to view the screenshots. Last night, I went to the local LUG meeting with my buddy Edward, which you'll see him on IRC as TK009. He's a member of the Fedora team. He does something with Fedora. I would probably say it's wrong what he does. But anyhow, I did an interview with him before one of my podcasts. He was nice enough to come by and pick me up and give me a ride to the local LUG meeting, which is down in Fort Lauderdale at Nova University, which is not too far from where we live. Luckily, Edward lives pretty close by me, so he can give me a ride down there every so often. All I drive is a little scooter, a 50cc scooter. I don't own a car. I work at the golf course here close by, and I just don't even fool with a car and insurance and gas and all that stuff. I just don't fool with it. I usually have to depend on somebody if I'm going for very far. I use that scooter just basically around town to go to doctors and stuff like that. I've actually been riding my bicycle back and forth to work. I got I bought a used bike, a nice one though. It's a Specialized Crossroads. I think it's about a 2007 model, but it had only been ridden a couple times. Real nice bike. The other bike I had was a Walmart special that was falling apart. So if I'm going to be commuting with bicycle every day, I figured I'd better invest in a nice bike, and I got these bags for it in the back, and it's really nice, and I enjoy riding the bike. What I'm trying to do is I quit smoking about 3 months ago. So in order I don't get too awful fat, I wanted to try to ride my bike back and forth to work. It forces me to ride it, because if I get up in the morning, I'm usually not too tired, so I don't mind. Plus, it's nice in the morning, peaceful. And I work at the golf course close by here, by where I live. It's basically only about a 4-mile bike ride. So it's about right. 4 miles there, 4 miles, and then 4 miles when I get off of work. And the 4 miles, it takes me, at the beginning, it was taking me maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Now it really only takes me maybe 10, 15 minutes. So it's about right. I'm not really getting too tired by the time I get there. It might be a little more. I haven't really figured it out exactly. Maybe it's a little longer than 4 miles. I'm not sure. Somewhere around there, though, 4, maybe 5 miles at the most. And it has helped. So then I'm forced, though, when I get to work, because it's been hot here lately. And I guess all over the country, but here in South Florida, it's like being in Texas or Alabama or Georgia. I mean, it's brutal hot. And when I get off work, I start at 4. Well, I get up at 4, actually, and I go in around 5 in the morning early. But I get off early. I get off like 3 most days. So it's really hot at 3. But I have no choice but ride the bike, because I have no way to get back home. And the bike's there, and I would, even if I bum a ride with somebody, you got to put the bike in their car. It's just too much trouble. So it forces me to go ahead and ride the bike. So I ride the bike back. So that's been working out pretty good. Edward was nice enough to take me to the local lug meeting, and we met some people, and everybody was real nice. And the guy there last night, he talked about DNS, and their lab that they have the meetings in is really nice. It's a nice lab. It's their computer lab for the university. They all run. I saw the computers had Windows on it. I was like, I can't believe they would put Windows on these. But anyhow, they could certainly save a lot of money by taking Windows off all those. But the guy was real nice, the guy that did the talk. And I actually learned some stuff. Edward said that he pretty much knew all that. But I've never been a administration person. I just do this stuff around my little home network and everything. And I understood the basics of DNS, but I didn't understand some of the terminology. I didn't understand how the addresses were actually looked up and the different terms that they use. So it was good for me. It was interesting. So we should be able to go again. We'll go next time when they have something that we're interested in. And didn't cost anything. They had food and drink there for us. It was real nice. We ran across a guy at the meeting, and Edward had met him before and seemed like a real nice fellow. He was bought a Mandrake 2008 Mandrake disc with support and everything. I don't know what it cost him, but anyhow, he has a Dell laptop, I think he said. And on his computer, the disk wouldn't boot. So Edward did get the disk booting with no ACPI. And so he could get it to boot, but after that, the guy's lost. I mean, he's really lost. So he wants to install this Mandrake. And, I mean, I'm like, why in the world do you want? But I didn't say anything. I'm a Gen 2 guy. I just use Gen 2. I don't use RPM-based stuff. Now, if he wanted to put Debian on it, I'd say, yeah. If it was me, I would suggest to him put Debian on it. Or use a Debian-based distro like Ubuntu. Or use Memphis. Something like that. But an RPM-based distro, well, anyhow, they're just not my favorites. He got the newest Mandrake Live CD, and it will boot on it, boot up fine, but he doesn't know how to configure the networking or anything. He has the AT&T UVerse, which is a new thing that's coming around downhill. It's basically like a cable modem, comes with a cable modem, but it's got some other confusing stuff. It's a two-wire, and it uses USB, and I don't know, I was doing a little research on it, and it seems like you should just be able to connect with DHCP, basically. But you have to configure the modem initially with a Windows box. And basically what you do is you just there's a default IP address. You just go in there and, you know, put your information in and blah, blah, blah. I mean, he says it's working on Windows already. But what Windows does is naturally AT&T gives you a Windows program that does all that stuff in the background that you don't know what's going on. And with Linux, now you've got to do it yourself, at least fill out the information. And it basically looks like, if it's a wireless router, looks like to me that you could just use it as a wireless router with its laptop and just use it like that. You just have to, it's got a key, it's got a default key that's written on the modem, and it's got, you would just have to set up, go into the modem and give it a ESSID and take the key that's off the modem, use that key. I guess it's hard-coded into the modem. Supposedly, the modem is actually running Linux. Use that key, and then you just connect just like you would connect any other wireless router. I want to continue doing these screencasts. I enjoy doing them a lot. So if you happen to have a topic that you would like to a screencast done on, just go ahead and email me at david@linuxcrazy.com. Or also, if you have any comments about the show, this and that. I've been getting a lot of comments. People seem like they enjoy the show, so I'll keep doing them. I think I'm up to, 61? Like I said at the beginning, 61. And I don't see any reason to stop doing them. I'm not the best person to do podcasts, but I do them. So a lot of times as I'm doing the podcast, my mind goes blank halfway in. But thank goodness with Audacity, I can halfway edit out when I have these dead spots where my brain don't work properly. I try to write down a little outline of what I'm going to talk about ahead of time. But sometimes when you start getting involved in it, you kind of go away from the outline, and then I run into these blank spots. But that's all right. I'm not getting a raise anytime soon, and I'm not going to be fired anytime soon. So as long as there's people that enjoy listening to it, I'll keep doing it. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.